I had a random thought. Well, at the time, I thought it was a random thought on the way here. The wages of sin is death, and the penalty of not being at Sunday evening for a while is you have to do opening. Sure enough. All right. Psalms 128. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you eat the labor of your hands, you shall be happy, and it shall be well with you. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine in the very heart of your house, your children like olive plants all around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you out of Zion, and may you see the good of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Yes, may you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. All right, let's bow for prayer.
Well, it is good to be here. I don't know if I would say I'm totally excited, but I sort of am in some ways. Brother Ray asked me to do this sort of as to help out because Glenn couldn't be here. I was honored to do that, or felt like that was good for me to do that for Glenn. And I guess the one thing you deal with as a speaker, as if you don't have a subject, is you have the whole Bible. It should be easy to find something. And yet you have the whole Bible, and I was really struggling with what to talk about. So I elected to talk about my favorite subject, and that is the family. And so I had Psalms 128 read. I'm not going to spend a lot of time there. But, yeah, that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Some of you might wonder why I choose to speak from the podium. And I think it's simply because I come as an unworthy servant, someone who has lots of failures. And I want to be on the same level as you all, and I feel pretty comfortable here. So the purpose tonight is to encourage young families. You can decide if you're young or not, but I want to encourage some good things that I already see here. And I also want to share some things that I want you to do better in than I did. And we'll get to that as we go through. So some of the things that I share are going to be because of my failures, and to try to reinforce some good things here. I want to just look at a glance at the American family. I like statistics. So I like to look up averages and percentages and all that. So I looked up some things about the American family. Where are we today in America? It's actually hard to get good numbers because the family is so devastated that there's not even good statistics on how many stay married, because we're not even getting married. So those numbers are actually off. There's like 50% divorce rate. There is a huge percentage of children not living with their original parents. The number one reason for divorce is money. We've known that. Heard that before. So it's really becoming worse a lot faster, I think. And I see that with the guys I work with, who 25 years ago when I started, there was a few guys that had children. Almost no one that I work with has children. And so things are really changing. And I just want to go back. I want to go back to late 1930s and into 44 during World War II. Just glance at what World War II did to our families. So when the World War II started, 405,000 men died that were not in their families. So we have not half a million, lots of people, lots of men who died. You also had a huge number of women that went to work. And if you look at old pictures of military production, you see women on airplanes bolting them together. So just think about that for a minute, what effect that had. The next generation started to, or I grew up, that generation grew up with mothers not in the home. I actually think that that has had an effect on our families. As a nation, maybe not so much as Anabaptists, but it certainly has as a nation. In 1956, the average age for marriage was between 20 and 22. In 2022, it was around 29. Are we seeing a problem? Okay, so there's just some statistics. It looks like there's less than two children per household in the United States. So, what does all that mean for us? So, I'll probably read a couple of verses here in Genesis. We know these verses, probably went over them in Bible school here a little bit, but Genesis 2:21-25 is how God caused Adam to fall asleep and he made a helpmeet. In Genesis 1:27-28 is where he told man, he created man, he blessed them, he said, be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. So your job is to get married and have children. That's what you're supposed to do. And God saw in verse 31 that everything that he had made and it was good. It was very good. So that establishment of the family was really good. And when the family crumbles, we see what happens in society, in government, in church. When family gets distorted and starts to crumble, it has an effect on our society. Many of our children in the United States have such a distorted view of home that they don't want to get married and they don't want to have children. It is not really that surprising. So how do we keep our families healthy? Maybe we could rely on the government. You think that the government is going to make America great again? And I think we all would agree, probably not. Can the government make America godly again? Probably not. An executive order is not going to make America great again. It's just not. So we're going to go through some things about the family. We're going to start with dad. This is probably the most important one. And these are going to build on each other. So be patient. You might think, well, you left this big thing out. When we get to the end, hopefully we can tie some of this together. There's a lot of lessons a lot of books, seminars, things you can go to about being a dad. And if you read all these, and I haven't, but you go to and research it, there's like hundreds and thousands of books. It's like, wow, I have a lot of work to do. And some of them are really good. I agree. They're good. And how do we try to take, if you want to be a good dad, what's it mean? And how does that work? Well, there's just one thing I think that I picked, and that is a dad that's involved. And, you know, sometimes we can overthink it, I think. We can get so caught up in reading a lot of books that I'm not against, just saying that a father needs to be involved with his family. And that might include changing diapers. And don't ask me how many I ever did, but it might be doing dishes. It might be reading stories. It might be making a meal. But you're a father that's involved. You don't have to be handsome or strong or smart or popular to do that. You just have to be there. And what happens when a father is not active in his family? What happens when dad's not there? And we're going to talk about the family table a little bit later, but what happens when dad's not sitting at the table, maybe spiritually? What happens when dad's not around? And we see in Ephesians 6, that very well-known verse, verse 4, Ephesians 6, 4, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Those two words, nurture, is tender care or nourishing. Giving them food, things that they need to grow. And also the idea of being careful. And admonition is teaching or instructing. It might mean that we help them up after a bike wreck over and over and over again. It's the idea of teaching and instructing, and we're going to talk about discipline a little bit later. So a father that's involved and stays involved. I will say, so from personal experience, and I don't know, I haven't done a survey. And if you remember back a couple years ago when Wilmer was here, he talked about a father and how a father changes through life. And I could identify with that because there were some years, particularly 3-4 years ago, where I wasn't at the table. And really not doing well. And that had an effect. And I guess what I want to point out is sometimes my children will say, well, Dad, you're different now. I am different now. Whether it's good or not, I can't say totally, but so your children, as a father, your children are going to possibly have different parents as they get older. Maybe they'll be more patient, which is something that I certainly could have used as a young father. We're going to come back to some things a little bit later. We're going to talk about the mother. This one's very simple as well. And this is something that has been taught here and very easy to understand. It's 1 Timothy 5:13. And that's just being a keeper at home. So 1 Timothy 5:13, I'm going to read these. This is taken a little bit out of context because the first part of this passage is talking about widows. But I think the context of this and the application is really good. 13 and 14. And withal, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house. So that's speaking about widows. And not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. I will therefore that the younger women marry and bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproach. For that verse, if we take that for what it is there, younger women are to get married. We're not to be 30 and 35 years old. There's place for people not to get married. I understand that. But to be selfish and to be doing career things, I'm not sure that that's appropriate for a woman of the church, woman of the Lord. And very simple here. Younger women will be marry and bear children. They're supposed to be busy. They should be doing things. Proverbs 31, I'm not going to read all these verses, 27 and 28 specifically, speak about the wisdom of a wife, and it's all in the context of doing it from the home. It's pretty interesting if you, young men, if you have a chance, read that and think about it. So it's really important for, especially when the children are young, that stability, that protection, that nourishment that they get at home. The home should be a shelter from the world. And this is something where, as a father, the best part of my day is coming home. I love to come home. And there is just, it's a refuge from the things you deal with in the world. I work with the general public. It can really get tiresome. It can wear you out. And so it's a place of refuge. So I think a wife should make the place a place for her husband to want to come to. He wants to come home and take care of your children. And as you're taking care of your children, I'll just say this. I think devices are proving to be disastrous to our children. Don't let devices babysit your children. Take your children out and let them get dirty. It's okay. We're going to come back actually to visit that a little bit later. Develop their imagination through constructive positive activities and reading to them, things like that. So we have dads who are involved, and we have mothers who are at home working in the home, and that allows us to do something that most Americans do not do. And what do you think that would be? Thank you. It's actually the room that people spend the most money on and spend the least time in is our kitchen. And The blessing of sitting around the table and eating a meal together is just tremendous. And so as a young father, when you have all that going on, that tends to be pretty stressful. That can be like just getting enough food in them is, that's a victory. And I still sometimes chuckle at families that I watch because I remember so well getting all five or six through the line. I laughed at Josh a couple of times. Getting all the children through the line is like, oh my, finally I get to eat. And that, but take advantage of those times because it's teaching something. It's teaching, well, first of all, Jesus himself illustrated that. So many times Jesus broke bread with the people he was with. Zacchaeus, he says, I'm coming to your house. And he ate with his disciples. He fed the people. And I think there's something special about eating a meal together. So it's a time to receive physical nourishment. And it's also a time for spiritual and emotional nourishment. So when they're young, I don't think that was our intent. We just tried to get it done and get cleaned up. As your children get older, it's a good time to talk about things. And that's been really encouraging for us. Really good time, lots of good laughs. I'm not so sure that the best time is the best time for discipline and punishment. Just for what it's worth, maybe it's not the best time all the time. I think the key there is together. Is being together, eating together. One thing that we started to do more recently in this ongoing struggle to decide who's doing the dishes. Does anybody have that struggle at home? We have this struggle. We have a list, and we still can't quite. It's just hard to get this done. So more recently, we had this little thing going on that when everybody leaves the table, they take their plate, they put it in the sink, and they put two things away. So that's made cleanup a lot easier. So you younger ones can think about that. But it's the idea that we're doing something together. We all help to clean up. We all help to make the mess. We can all help to clean up. So anyhow, that's just an illustration. But so number four, after we have mothers and fathers, and then we have breaking bread together, there's something else that parents need to be together on, and that's the direction for your family and the discipline. It's very difficult if dad allows one thing and mom allows another. It's just difficult to, not whether it's right or wrong, just difficult to be together in that. And I don't have a lot more on that. It's just something to think about. And then we're going to move right into discipline. Number five is discipline. I'm not going to read all the verses because it's just a lot. I hear so many people talk about not disciplining their children, not spanking their children. And I don't know. I don't go to Walmart a lot, but I feel like it's pretty self-explanatory, isn't it? We're going to read Proverbs 23, 13, and 14. Withhold not correction from the child. For if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod, and thou shalt deliver his soul from hell. It's talking about disciplining your children physically, and there's other verses, you know them, Proverbs 10, 13, 13, 24, there's five or six there. All of them use the description of a rod. And I think that that's important. I also think it's important to use it correctly. It's times that I didn't. The rod of correction used correctly, along with good conversation and instruction, are key, I believe. I personally believe that children should not run the house. I think the parents should. So sometimes I don't know who is training who in these families. So along with discipline, I'll say that probably as a younger father, I didn't do this well. And that is along with good discipline is show and tell love. And there was many times, and my children can attest to this, that I was pretty impatient and was pretty strict on my children. And I'm not saying that that was all wrong, but there was times that I missed this part. So it's good to show and tell love to your children. It's okay to tell them that you love them. It's okay to hug them. And appropriate physical touch is really important. That's a whole study. What appropriate touch does to people and the chemicals that are released in the brain and all that. It's very appropriate for a father to hug his daughters in the right way. There's been some that won't do that, and I think there's something there, but in the right way. So don't take me out of context. It's certainly there's a time and a place. Both sons and daughters. Yeah. So the next one, number 7, if you want to turn to Deuteronomy 6, we're going to take the rest of the verses out of Deuteronomy 6. We all know this pretty well. This is referred to quite a bit when it comes to the home and teaching our children. Some interesting verses here. And the first one I have is to be intentional. And in the busyness of our life, we tend to have good intentions on doing something with our children, and the end of the week comes and we haven't done it. Okay, well, I'll get this Monday night, and then something happens, and then it's Wednesday and it's Friday and we don't do it. And we're busy, and you know, it's just, I think it's very important. Let me just read Deuteronomy 6, 1-3. Now these are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that ye might do them in the land whither ye go to possess it. So there is action on that part. That thou mightest fear the Lord thy God, to keep his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee, thou and thy son's son, all the days of thy life, and that thy days may be prolonged. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee, and that thou may increase mightily, as the Lord God of thy fathers hath promised thee in the land that floweth with milk and honey. So there is things that we're to be active on, and if we don't plan it, it doesn't happen. We're supposed to be doing things intentional. So this can be really difficult for younger families who have small children and you need a babysitter. And I remember that. We were busy enough that sometimes it went for a while before we had these. And then when we did go, we felt funny because our children weren't with us. It was strange. But plan talks with your husband and wife, with your spouse. We didn't do well with that. It just didn't. It's just something that is hard to plan. Find somebody that can take your children for an evening and go talk. Along with that, as your children get older, plan times. Tomorrow night at 7:00, we're having a talk. And this is our hour. Started doing that with our children. It doesn't happen. Maybe it should be more. Some good talks aren't planned. Some good talks, it just happens. But there's something nice about taking tomorrow night's your night, and we're going to sit and talk. That's been really interesting. One thing we do with our children, we just started this, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, is that I take my daughters out for their birthday. And we just sit and talk. And Renee takes the boys out. That's really been a special time. So that's just one way. That's just one way. There's many things you can do. You'll figure it out. But be intentional on taking time to talk to your children. So we're going to move right into number 8 to go along with that. And that is Deuteronomy 6, 4-9. And that, I don't think I need to read all that, but the verse 5 there talks about love the Lord thy God with all your heart, your soul, and your might. And then it goes on there to teach them diligently and that bind them of putting signs up in front of your house. That's that sort of thing, that concept of keeping it right with you. So this is, as you're talking with your children, talk about things that matter. I know lots of people that can talk. We all can talk. Not everybody can talk about things that matter with their children. And I think that's important to do when they're young, so when they get older, you can still do it. And meeting them where their struggles are today. One of the things that I think is getting better, but has been lacking, is talk about who they are and what happens during puberty and that sort of thing. That whole nest of subjects has been quiet until more recently. There's a book you can get by John Koblenz, God's Will for My Body. I passed a bunch of them out here 6 or 8, maybe 10 years ago. Dale Foreman originally got me that book. It takes being intentional to finish it, but it's really important. You don't have to use that one. There's other ones available. You can get them actually on Amazon, or you can get them through CLE. It's a place to start. My children asked to do that because they want to know who they are and why things are the way they are. So moving into number 9, along with talking about things that matter, this is along the same lines. As we have conversations, instill a vision. Now, I personally think that this is probably one that, when I say we, I don't mean just Pleasant Hill, but like in general, maybe the Christians as in general, I think maybe we lack this one a lot. And that's instilling a vision in your children to have something more than the American dream. And I think if we were honest, we all go through a time in life where making money is important and paying off your house is important, and it is. I'm not talking about not being responsible. But there's more to life than that. And I think our materialism is destroying our families and our churches. I don't have the answer. I'm just saying, think about it. I can see you being a nurse and serving in Guatemala. Serving the Lord somewhere, not that we all have to go away, that's not what I'm saying, but there is things that we can plant in our children when they're little, that they'll remember. I don't know a lot about the Jewish families and how they do this, but I know that the father has a blessing on the children. And I think, if I'm correct, the Jewish people have more daughters than any other nationality, I think. It's because of, a lot of it is because of what God has given them, a gift, for one thing, and the blessing of the father on the child. So, can we encourage our children at a younger age to think about going into volunteer service? Yeah, maybe I'll let it go at that. Just think about that a little bit. Number 10. So, we want to encourage our children with the vision. We want to see our children serve the Lord, and I think there's something key as a father. Take your children, don't send them. And this is going to be a little expensive, and this is going to get worse as they get older. It's going to be harder, but you need to show them and tell them what service looks like. And that can be something as simple as visiting older members. It can be a variety of things. But along with that vision has to be something that we're doing to show them that. And take them and get them to places that are encouraging. Maybe it's a camp meeting place or a place where other good families who have similar visions and goals. Remember that your children will most likely or often marry your friend's children. That's a new one. Never dreamed that my daughter would marry one of my best friend's son. Just didn't think about that when I was young. And that's been sort of funny. We chuckle about that a little bit, but we never would have thought that. But as we take our children through things, I think the hardest thing right now, at least for me, for us, and I think probably I would have some other people agree, how do we take our children through the age of technology? I have no idea. It's worse than TV ever was. I don't know. I wish we could address that somehow in a better way, but we all have heard sermons on how technology is dangerous and what not to do, but you know, the nuts and bolts of that at home, what's that look like? How do we limit that? And yeah, it's making us lazy. So the number 11, this is a real quick one. Celebrate with your children on life's victories. Have a little story about my grandma. I don't know if she's here or not, Grandma Godfrey. She, at one point, I don't know if my grandma ever played volleyball as a youth or not, but when I was little, I think maybe, I don't know, 8 or 9, she was teaching me how to serve a volleyball, and I served the first time I got one over the net. And she was all excited, and you know, my grandma, she grabbed a hold of me, and she was swinging me in a circle. And she was saying good job or something, and she dropped me, and I broke my collarbone. And so be careful. But you know what? I always remembered that. And celebrate with your children the things that when they do a good job. And remember to reinforce the good things that you see. Yeah, it's okay to tell your son that you're proud of him when you are. I think that's appropriate. So the last one is something that'll just change your attitude. I shouldn't say that. I think the world could use this one a lot, is be thankful for every time you can be together. And I hear so many people talk about their children as being a bother. I hear it all the time at work, and I'm starting to actually make comments like, oh man, I have 6 children and I love it. Should have had 12. No, I don't say that. But our children are olive plants. That verse is actually, I don't know if I can see it here real quick. It's actually here in Deuteronomy 6. It says it again about being olive plants. We see it in Psalms 128. We see it again here. I'm not seeing it. But an olive plant was a symbol of peace, prosperity, and abundance. Having your children around the table is a blessing. And the uses of olive trees, oil is the most, and which is sort of interesting. The oil, olive oil is the most useful. Or that's what they use it for the most. And it's useful for household chores. And it's used in the temple to make light. They use olive oil to burn to make light. And I sort of thought that's an interesting thing. Your children are used to make light and glorify God. And we can use our children, whether it's visiting or singing or whatever it is, to glorify God. And being thankful and showing that to the world. Take your family, if you want to be a witness, take your family shopping. You will get noticed. It's amazing, but as much as I hate shopping, sometimes it's sort of funny to go away together. Yeah, people sometimes say things. I'm sure you've had that happen. So, I think that's all I have. Thank you. I hope that somebody was encouraged, and I meant it to be that, to be encouraging. Yeah, thank you.
What does an old geezer like me say after that? I didn't see that coming. Oh my. Saying like statistics, there's one, this is off the top of my head, one that I'm hearing. By 2030, give or take, one half of women between 20 and 40 in our society will be single and childless. That's where our society is headed. I guess I kind of contributed to that, and I'm kind of a forerunner to that. I kind of saw it coming. There's a verse that I find scary. There's some young people here. I have a lot of trouble with dating, obviously, like a lot. It's the most stupid way there is to get married, it's just that all the rest are worse. But there's a verse that I find scary in 1 Peter 3, 7. Likewise, he is speaking to husbands. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. What's that about? Dwell with them according to knowledge. What knowledge? What exactly are we supposed to understand here? I do not find a comparable instruction to wives. So how do we understand? How do we understand women? When women understand women? I have no idea. Of course, we live in a technologically advanced society, so I asked Google, and Google does not know either. I found out the hard way. So that's a little difficult about how to fulfill that verse. One thing I try to do, my parents helped me with that. I thought my parents were very terrible and awful and abusive and everything else until I compared them to anybody else. And then I found out exactly how loving they were. They were very loving, understanding, kind. I didn't always think it, but they were. And I had a lot of time. I was thinking of it on the way here. I had a lot of time for imagination. We were expected to show initiative, my brother and I. And we did. Sometimes that shows up, like times like this. But that was sort of how our family was. I remember clearly being around the supper table. Dad was very careful to make sure each person had their time to talk. So you have to learn patience. My brother, I sat with my back to the main door of the house, which was not a nice place to sit. My brother sat next to the refrigerator, and we kept the milk in the refrigerator to keep it cold during mealtime. My father and I drank a lot of milk. So my brother had to get it out because he was next to it. I would be thirsty, and I would ask for a glass of milk, and Bob would get it out. It would be passed down, I'd fill it up, pass it back, and I would drink the milk and ask for more. My dear brother, very loving brother, you know that, would get mad. So we had to learn patience both ways. That was around the supper table. One thing I try to do, and I don't know how to do it, it doesn't work well, and we did this at supper table, we've done it other places, teach people how to process, teach people how to analyze. I'm running into something just recently about eternal security. Some man on YouTube somewhere is coming down really hard on once saved, always saved. And once that little switch is flipped, you're saved and can never be lost. And he uses Hebrews chapter 6 to back it. He was going over this, and of course, I'm kicking in my analytical mind, and he's not making a lot of sense here. He's taking some stuff pretty badly out. One thing we need to teach our young people very carefully is how to analyze this stuff. The downside of that is that's a weapon can be used back against us. But if they don't know, they will be led wrong. To back up what Andy's saying, we have a lot of child trafficking and kidnapping and abuse. A lot of this is done by grooming children. A lot of this is done through devices. And then they get taken out and they put in all kinds of immorality and they're tricked into this kind of. And I would think the best way to do that is look up the people who do it and punch them in the nose. We're non-resistant, understand that. It turns out the best defense against that is involved fathers. When those children, the daughters in particular, but the children, have a father who's in their lives, basically those people who try to get them out don't have a chance. You would not think that. The other thing that Andy said that struck me hard is talk about things that matter. So much stuff that I talk about doesn't. We really need to focus and intentional. This matters. Let's stand for prayer.